gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tierlawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature, with 15 garden centres nationwide.
Now we're joined by Dermot Gavin, horticulturalist, garden designer, Chelsea Gold Medal winner, podcaster and broadcaster. Dermot, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, if you've got a piece of old rock, you can transform it if you've got the money.
Well, that's pretty much. And if you got it in a dowry, let's say you married an Italian Milanese noblewoman in the 1600s, and along with the money came these islands.
Now, this particular piece of rock we're talking about, where exactly is it?
It's in on a lake very near the Swiss border in Italy.
Lake Maggiore.
Lake Maggiore, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how big is it?
It's not huge. I suppose it would be about 15 acres in total. But it wasn't only one island that this guy received in the dowry. He received a whole series of them, all of which he built on.
Now, the idea of actually transforming what were really rocky outcrops in the middle of a lake into something magnificent, what inspired him?
I suppose the wedding inspired him, and he realised it was an amazing location. So it is surrounded by mountains, very near Switzerland, as I say, about an hour and a half north of Milan. And he was inspired also by the beauty of his wife. So his wife became the muse, and he decided he wanted to build an amazing garden dedicated to her.
Her name was Isabella.
Yes.
And an island in Italian is Isola. So
yes.
Isola Isabella, and it's become Isola Bella.
That's it.
It's been shortened.
The beautiful island.
The beautiful island. How beautiful is it?
It's extraordinary. Now, it's very, it's kind of amazing. It's like a wedding cake in a way. So the island is quite big. It's kind of long, like a finger. At one end, he built a palace, as you would, and right surrounding the palace and running down to the opposite end of the island are terraces and terraces. So he created 10 different terraces carved out of this rock. There was no water, so the rock was rising. If you think of the Skelligs, probably no water other than whatever the clouds bring in at the top of the Skelligs. So he created a system of pneumatics in one of the towers, one of the ornate towers that were built in the 1600s, and carted out boatload after boatload after boatload of soil, because there was no soil. This was just
a rock.
Yeah.
So in order to have planting, you have to have soil and you have to have water.
Exactly. So, the money that must have been spent on it was really quite extraordinary. But the building of this particular garden and the island has continued for 400 years. So it didn't stop during their lifetime. On and on and on.
But I'm astonished at the technology. Now, maybe I shouldn't be, because if you think of what the Romans did with irrigation and with their fountains and all the rest of it, people were quite ingenious with the limited technology they had.
The Romans, but also if you go back to ancient Peru or whatever, there's only so much that we know. Or we started off this whole series talking about the mythical hanging gardens of Babylon and the irrigation system that would have been developed for that. So this is really quite contemporary. Or even the Alhambra, where aqueducts were used to build.
And just the coolness that you get from flowing water, as it evaporates, it cools the air.
Exactly.
So you had these cool areas in the sweltering sun.
Yes, yes. But the thing was, I suppose, to create something really quite ornamental and theatrical about it. And indeed, in this garden, they even created a theatre. This is one of these gardens where, yes, it's aristocrats, it's money, it's location, but there's not a lot more to say about it. It's Baroque gardening. So it's filled with fountains and statues and terraces. And originally the planting would have been quite simple. And as more and more plants were discovered from, let's say, the New World, the planting got more elaborate and more ornate and became a kind of botanical gardens. But again, if you go onto the Instagram, I've put a video up and we'll just show you. This is a garden that's like a wedding cake. So it's a series of 10 terraces coming up magically out of this island. But it's quite obviously man-made, because the main terrace, the one that is a theatre, is 5 stories high, but it's rectangular in shape and fronted by a curved front, I suppose.
Balustrade, is it?
Balustrade, yes, with a unicorn at the top, which would have been the symbol of the family. And to this day, it's performances. To this day, it's owned by the same family and used for musical performances. There are parts of the garden, there's a wall garden that is only open to, it's only the family that have the keys to
but
it.
But can the rest of us go if we have a mind to?
If we have a mind to, if we can get over to the north of Italy, it's what Andrea was saying there about everybody going to Venice. If you went to this place, it is really quite extraordinary because it's a garden floating in a lake. It's not cheap to go. It's about 28 euros for an adult, 14 euros for a child, but certainly it is open to the public.
And well worth the money.
It's extraordinary. It really is extraordinary. It's like, you know, if when Trump got married to Ivana, you can imagine what the wedding cake was like. You know, gilded beyond belief, terraced beyond belief, and adorned with every adornment you can imagine. So used for things like fashion shows like Louis Vuitton. And it's one of these incredibly magical Baroque places to visit.
Now, it has an interesting history in terms of the people that we'd have heard of
yes.
who actually visited there.
Yes, so Napoleon went there in 1897.
Did he bring Josephine with him?
He brought Josephine with him and 60 other people. Wasn't particularly welcomed because seemingly they were very rude to the staff. The guy who owned it, the Lord of the Manor at the time, didn't go to welcome him personally because the French troops had destroyed his one of his estates. Seemingly they were very rude, they were very dirty, and they broke furniture. But and Napoleon was meant to be a little bit bored there, but it didn't stop him coming back a few years later.
Okay, so that's back in the day.
Yep.
In more contemporary times, other people have visited?
1935, so there was a meeting of Hitler was on the rise, so Mussolini, the French foreign minister, and Ramsay from Britain all met there to try to...
And this was a diplomatic meeting to try and avoid war, I presume.
To try and avoid war, to try and shore up the Treaty of Versailles and to talk tariffs, funnily enough, on the island. So they were having their main talk just on the mainland, which is just less than a mile away, in a town called Strata, and they signed the declaration that which Britain was soon to break within days was to break, but they signed it in the ballroom of the palace, and the ornate nature of the palace again is quite extraordinary.
Now, I presume at 28 euro a pop for adults and 14 for kids, this is probably not sustaining itself, is it?
It probably is because it's incredibly popular in that part of Italy. Yet tourists from all around the world. It's absolutely.
I'm sure there's a lot of maintenance and even maintaining the planting and making sure that if something dies off, it's got to be replaced, and then the old structures must be suffering wear and tear.
Yes, they do. At 400 years, they would be. But it's incredibly popular, just as, let's say, Paris Court here, which would have been, is kind of 200 years less old than that. They're great. You know, tourism is really big in bringing in revenue, but it is continually invested and reinvested in the not only this island, but the
and the family
islands.
Is just their summer home, or are they?
It's their summer home.
Yeah. And how did the Borromeos make their money? I mean, they clearly are well resourced.
They were well resourced. So you know, before Italy was one country, it would have been broken into a number of different regions, and these would have been the lords and rulers of that region. So they would have had money from all the farmers, cereal farmers, whatever. Mm. So they became nobility.
You've supplied me with some pictures of the place. It truly is magnificent. I mean, they're obviously taken by drone flying over the place, but really astonishing stuff.
It's an astonishing garden. When I first went there, actually, in more recent years, watching that program, Succession, yeah. I imagined one of the family conferences would have taken place in the palace, and you would have seen the family break out and having side meetings on different terraces in the garden. But it is magnificent. It is, completely man-made. And I think one of the amazing things about it is the contrast between the land beyond. So this is man-made hills. And if you look beyond it, it is in a lake, on a lake, in a bowl, surrounded by rugged hills. So the contrast between what's been man-made, the soil being brought over, that power, that whole kind of, in a way, Renaissance idea of upping your family's history, the idea of that big unicorn and all the adornment that goes with it.
I'm sure a Bond movie will be shot there someday.
It deserves to be.
All right, Jeremy Gavin, horticulturist, garden designer, Chelsea Gold Medal winner, podcaster and broadcaster. Jeremy, thank you very much for joining us.
Gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tyrlone Country Life. Gardens are our second nature, with 15 garden centres nationwide.